Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Before we get to my guest this week, I want to let you know that I'm going to be doing stand-up at Governor's Comedy Club in Levittown, New York. That's in Long Island, June 8th and 9th, this Friday and Saturday. So I hope you can come out. And on the Saturday show, 9:30, you get half off with the code Paul. So come on out. I'm a cheap date. We'll have some laughs. Governor's Levittown, go to govs.com for tickets this Friday and Saturday. Before we get to my guest, I spent this past weekend in the San Francisco Bay Area. Had a great time. You know, it just dawned on me, when you live in this area or you're visiting, you got to leave your house or your hotel with suntan lotion and a ski parka, and you have to leave a will behind, because you during the day, it's like 80 degrees, so you need the suntan lotion to protect your skin. And then as soon as the sun goes down with the weather off the water, it's about 36 degrees below zero. You need the parka, and you need to leave the will behind, because there's a good chance you're just going to die of hypothermia trying to go get milk. So it's an interesting place, but I always have a great time there. Now, we had a big incident in my house the other night between me and my son. I want to tell you about it. It has to do with deepdiscount.com. Don't go anywhere. Don't change the channel. Don't move. They're a sponsor. I need you to support them, because they support me and they can help me do this show. Okay. My son and I are scrolling through the on-demand movies, trying to figure out what movie we want to rent on the cable system there. And you know, they have them all lined up left to right. So he's scrolling through them like hyperspace warp speed. And I'm like, could you slow down so I could like read what the movie's about? He's like, I am slowing down. I go, no, you're not slowing down. You're going faster just to annoy me. He goes, no, I am. And then he's like, why do you have to control everything? I'm like, I don't have to control everything. And then he goes, well, you don't listen to me. And I'm like, I don't have a son. Okay, you don't need to do that in your life if you want to watch a movie. That's why I like deepdiscount.com, because you can buy movies, TV shows, everything. You can buy apparel, you can buy music, and you own it, and you don't have to deal with searching for stuff on cable systems anymore or any of that stuff, okay? Now, you go to my website, paulmercurio.com. You click on the Deep Discount logo. It'll take you right to their site, and you buy some stuff. You got going on right now, and all month is their summer site-wide sale. Look for coupon codes and icons to save even more on their already deeply discounted prices. And they got thousands of movies, TV shows, and a lot more. So stop wasting your time. Stop getting in fights with your loved ones or people you used to love, but they're annoying, if you know what I mean. Out this week, South Park, the complete 21st season, unbelievable, 21 seasons, now available on Blu-ray and DVD. Oh, by the way, as part of the sale, I got the Red Fox comedy album. Amazing. If you don't know him, listen to him. He's cutting edge. He's edgy before edgy even existed. And I got the Naked Gun movie trilogy. And one of them's got OJ in it, you know, at a time in his life when he wasn't hated by the entire world. So anyway, go to deepdiscount.com. Click on the logo on my website, paulmercurio.com, and you'll get some amazing savings and great deals. And you won't get in fights with your family. All right, my guest this week, comedian Eric Griffin. He's one of the stars of the hit Showtime series I'm Dying Up Here, which chronicles the comedy scene in the 70s in Hollywood. Really cool show. Really great conversation. Very, very funny guy. Please leave comments about this podcast on iTunes if you haven't already, and give us some nice ratings. And remember, you can check me out this coming weekend, June 8th and 9th, at Governor's Comedy Club in Long Island, New York. Go to govs.com for tickets, and we're giving you a special discount for the Saturday 9:30 show. You get half off with the code Paul. Enjoy Eric Griffin. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for checking in. Very, very funny guest this week. Great comedian out of Los Angeles. And you may know him from Workaholics, the show I'm Dying Up There. And he's got his second Showtime one-hour special coming out June 8th. Eric Griffin. What's up, man? Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. The wonders of technology that we could do it like this.
I know, right? I'm in one place in New York, and you're there, and then we got a third person in a studio, and hopefully the Russians aren't listening in, and we're all good, you know?
Well, they're for sure listening in.
Man, it's never a better time for comedy. I'll tell you that. With this day and age, are you talking much of politics in your stand up these days? I know there's a lot of observational stuff, and your first special was great. What are you hitting on these days?
No, you know what I do. It's not necessarily politics, but it's like things that are currently going on right now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mentioned the Me Too stuff a little bit in my new special. I talk about the national anthem protesting. I just talk about just protesting in general, just my general feeling about it. Sometimes it's annoying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
So it really is. Like, I can't stand like protesting at award shows, if, for instance, is something I talk about in my special.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're not brave. You know, the brave thing would be not to show up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna do the brave thing and all wear the same color dress. Like
you still showed up. You know what I mean? I think a more powerful message would have been at the Golden Globes if there were no females in the audience. Now that would have sent a message.
Right, exactly. Or there are some that, and listen, I think the Me Too movement is legitimate, and I think these people who have been sexually harassing people are complete assholes. But there's this one actress, and I wish I could remember her name. And but she was in Woody Allen's movie, I think Wonder Wheels. Anyway, she took the part, and then once the Me Too movement really, 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 you know, it peaked, was really like hot, and everybody was like jumping on and supporting it. She wrote an open letter on social media apologizing for taking the part in a Woody Allen movie, given his history with women, and also saying if she had to do it again, she wouldn't do it again. You can't do that. You knew who you were getting into bed with, no pun intended, when you took that movie. You can't suddenly go, oh man, I better be with all the cool kids and say that he's an asshole. Like, you took the movie, you knew what you were doing. You can't take it back, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's a weird thing. It's like, better late than never is kind of the attitude.
Yeah.
But it's like, I just think you have to pick and choose. Like, I just say, just own it. You know, that's all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if she would have came out and said, like, hey, you know what? I didn't think that it felt like no one cared about this, no matter what we did. And I still want to work.
Right.
And now that people are finally saying something about it, and there's actually a voice, and there's a movement that, you know, something is actually going to get done. I can understand why people now are coming to me and like, okay, well, now we're going to do something.
Right.
But own that, you know. Like, I didn't appreciate Natalie Portman at the Golden Globe, you know, when they're doing Best Director, and then she says another man or whatever she said, and then her next major movie that comes out is written and directed by a white guy.
right. It's like, how much money's,
you know,
on
like
the
if
table?
You really want to make it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think that these women have a lot of power. They do, and it's about time, and they're going to wield it. So just wield it.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
We don't want to. I don't want to see a movie where there's no women in it. I still want to see Jennifer Lawrence movies and Natalie Portman movies and all of them. Imagine if they just said, "Well, we're not going to do any movies." if all the women say, "Yeah, we're not going to be in any more parts unless there's 50% female involvement." I mean, what are we going to do?
Right.
Like, of course we're going to be like, "Hey, we got to do something about this."
Right.
You know. So.
Right.
But I mean, as a man, I didn't even realize. You know, we don't think about it. You know, we try to be sympathetic, but if we're really being honest, we don't really think about it. And we should. And now we are. You know?
So I think that's important. I do think that, you know, and unfortunately, I do think it's still, you know, there's still a glass ceiling. And I do think that the statistics are still out there that women don't get paid the same amount of money, you know, for the same job that men do, you know, like that Mark Wahlberg retake thing where he got like $1 million and what's her name, got $80 a day. And it was like, Jesus.
Well, but part of that too was just bad agents, you know.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of reaction are you getting? Because like I'll talk about, you know, sexual harassment and stuff like that, and the current state of things, and you can obviously in a way that's supportive of that. You know, Me Too movement, but you still get, I can still feel the room get a little tense when you bring it up because they're not sure where you're going to go with it. Do you find that a little bit when you're talking about some of these topics?
Oh my goodness. Like, I think in the past year, I would say that we are just super sensitive. I think the country's sensitive, and the closer you get to the middle of America, I mean, so, you know, I'm from LA, you're in New York. Mm. So, you know, these people think they understand what Trump supporters actually look like or what they feel like or what's going on in middle America.
Right.
We don't know until you're in front of them. I've been out there. You know, I find that like some Trump supporters are sore winners. You know, like, what are you so angry about? You won.
Yeah.
The guy's in office.
I know. It's
you know, and they're cursing at you and like you can't even make a joke, you know. And then the liberals are too sensitive. You know what I mean? There's like, it's just black and white, this Twitter culture, you know, everything's black and white.
Yeah, nobody.
No gray area.
I go on these, you know, sort of CNN, MSNBC, you know, I'll go on some of these shows like a commentator or whatever and, you know, try to bring some funny to it, but make a point. And nobody wants to shit on their own person on either side of the aisle. And everybody's locked into talking points. So it's sort of like, okay, well, what are we doing here? Like, it's just all you're doing is appeasing the masses who are watching that network. So for Fox, if you just say all the right conservative things, the correct conservative things, then everybody watching is happy and never deviate from that. And same thing with MSNBC for the liberals. And there's no, like I was saying to somebody, between the incredibly PC nature of our world and college campuses now, and how just what you said, how it's like everything's black and white and nobody has a sense of humor about anything. I don't know if George Carlin could have blown up to today the way he did in his day.
For sure. For sure. I don't think All in the Family would stay on the air.
No. No.
You know, the Jeffersons wouldn't have been on the air. It's unbelievable that there's just no sense of humor about anything, you know. It's hard. So, like, I really went on the edge with my special, you know. June 8th, I talk about some things. It's just my perspective. And it's like, you don't got to agree with me, but you can laugh at my take.
Yeah.
You know,
why did you name it American Warrior? I like the, with a K, like you're in your name.
Well, cause I saw my name. That's the only other, that's the main reason. Cause I see Eric in American, you know what I mean?
So interesting. Oh, so, all right, there you go.
So I'm fully American. That's what my thing is. It's like, I feel like there's a war against free speech.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
A war against comedy and a war against free speech. And I just feel like I'm a soldier on the front line.
Yeah. Well, I'm Italian. And, you know, it's funny because what I'm talking about from a race perspective is I'm considered a white guy. Right. But, yeah, you know, just not too long ago, like less than 100 years ago, my grandparents were the minority in this country. They came from Italy. But if you're a European immigrant, you stop being a minority and you're a majority. And so then people make all sorts of off-color jokes about being Italian, and I kind of laugh at them. And I don't know, like, where the rules are. Like, I don't think I can do that with Indian people. And so we sort of pick and choose who we can sort of poke fun at or be honest about. And
based off who suffered the most.
Yeah, you know, and and I pulled an Asian guy aside, a comic, and he started going, you know, you white people, and it was just a device. You know that device the comics will use to get the audience on their side and get the white people laughing out of guilt? I said, you can't do that. Yeah. He goes, what? I go, I never tell anybody what to do, but you can't call white people. He goes, why? I go, because you're fucking Asian and there's more of you than anybody right now. You're not a suppressed. Black people have a right to use that term. Maybe Mexicans have a right to use that term. You don't have a right to use that term. It's not a color thing. It's a suppression class issue and you can't use it. It's not fair. It's not I go, no, stop it. You're a majority. Deal with it. Come up with your comedy another way. It was driving me crazy, you know.
Well, it's just one of the, but like I say, I mean, we're just too sensitive, you know.
Yeah.
that's just mainly the point, you know. We're living a sensitive culture, and I think when the pendulum is swinging right now, it's swinging and swinging and swinging, and I get it, you know, because we've let things go for so long. We've let you know, bad behavior linger in our society for so long that it became the norm. You know, so now it's time. Now we're, you know, when you look at the list of men that have been, taken down because of the Me Too movement, it's an indictment on our society, really, that this has been going on for this long and we're finally saying something about it.
Yeah.
But that's been the case for race relations, for all of this. So now we're just trying to finally, like, put it right. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we still got to have humor. You know, we got to have jokes. And it's just,
it's the last place where people are speaking honestly, and you got to still have that. I know you mentioned, like, you stopped working college campuses or didn't have no interest because of that. Did you have some experience?
Because it's just, they're the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the absolute worst. The smartest, stupidest people I've ever met.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
you know,
they can't get out of their own way with their own sort of hang-ups and PC bullshit. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, they can't think outside the box. You know, and they don't. They're just so offended by every little thing, and you know, it's like jokes and humor, it's all based off, you know, the circumstances and what's going on. Like, we're not at a wake, you know, we're not, I'm not at a wake where I'm like, you know, talking ill of the dead or something.
Right.
You know, it's like, this is the environment to talk about certain things. And they come to your shows with the attitude to bring you down.
Yeah.
To tear you down, to shut you up.
Yeah.
And I just think like that is total opposite of what this environment is supposed to be for.
Yeah, and I think that everybody feels empowered and everybody thinks they have a voice because on some level they do, and they feel like they can exercise that voice wherever they want and whenever they want. And that's where they don't get, like, there are some places where, you know, you just need to listen and shut up, you know what I mean? And I mean, I know that there are some campuses, I stopped doing them too, because like they'll want you to sign a document that says you won't talk about this, that, and the other thing. So at the end of the day, you're talking about completely mundane bullshit, like, you know, how lousy the food is in college and, you know, you know, how bad your sports team sucks or whatever. So it's like, how are you finding being a comic today and then playing, and you're on the show, I'm dying up here with my buddy Al Madrigal, who I worked with when he was on The Daily Show. You're in that era. It's funny because you get to be in the current era, but then you're sort of playing that era, which is a real, for people who don't know out there, explain a little bit. But the premise is you're working basically at the Comedy Store, which was like the epicenter of comedy in the 70s.
It's a fictional place. In the show, it's a fictional place called Goldie's. And the Comedy Store actually exists in our world.
Right.
But, and it's about this, like, the trials and tribulations of these comics in the 70s at this, like, golden era when, you know, some of the major stars we know were just coming up. You know, like Pryor and Letterman and all these people, Marsha Warfield and all these types of people. And so, it's, you know, we're in the 70s and it's weird. It's weird to do the show considering what was going on in the 70s. I mean, people think things are bad now. I mean, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we weren't thinking about anything like this. Race relations. And this is when comics first started talking, you know, with point of view and edginess. This is when this really started. This is why it was like the heyday, the golden era of it.
Right.
It's interesting to play this time period. It really is, considering everything that's going on in the world. And it makes it a little difficult, you know, because in this show, we could, you know, we wouldn't be thinking about women's rights. You know what I mean? So to be accurate, we have to be like, you know, kind of scummy. But, you know,
there's like misogyny, drug abuse, like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very male, racism, it's a male dominated. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so nothing much has changed, you know. that's the sad part.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
What was the motivation for them to do the show? I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, it's really entertaining, and Jim Carrey's it comes from he's a producer on it. But like, was it to kind of just to shed a light on some of the things you just said to show how maybe things really haven't changed that much in 40, 50 years, whatever it is?
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine, like, 40 years? I think that Jim Carrey, a lot of the stuff in the show are Jim Carrey's own personal stories, because he was around in that era, too. You know, he came up through that, you know? And so this is, like, his homage to that, what was going on then. And he just wanted to tell these stories because they were interesting and fascinating. And, you know, this made some of the great stars of our time right now. It's like, you know, these guys just trying to do comedy, just trying to make it, just trying to get on TV, just trying to get on Carson and just trying to, like, you know, let people see you. And it was just a very hard time. You know, there was no boom hadn't happened yet. So there was only a few places. There was only a few places to perform, and people weren't really talking with a strong point of view yet. So it was, you know, I think he just wanted to show that. He wanted to, like, you know, give respect to where he came from. And, you know, it's very fascinating, you know, especially to hear his own stories about Kinnison and going to Cantor's after the shows and fights in the parking lot and sleeping in a closet when he first got to LA and, you know, just trying to make it. The struggle is the same. I think if you're an artist and you watch our show, I think you kind of feel that. You kind of feel like, oh, man, I know how that is. That struggle is real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I had Leno on the podcast and he talked about, you know, he left Boston. He went to New York, you know, and he said, like, I had to get out of Boston. I go, why? He goes, well, because you can get too comfortable especially in your hometown, and then you never leave and you don't really grow as an actor, an artist, and, you know, and also just in terms of your celebrity and everything else. And so he ends up in LA, and he said he was living, he refused to take a job. He wanted to focus on stand-up. So he would live in and sleep in his car a lot of the times. And then he said he would go on at the Comedy Store, and nobody wanted to follow Richie. And I go, Richie? He goes, Richard Pryor. He called him Richie. And I go, why? He goes, because he would kill and nobody would follow him. He goes, but I would want to follow him. I go, why? He goes, well, because I figured that if I go up and I do 15 or 10 minutes and even two jokes work, really work well after Richie kills, then I know I've got two killer jokes. And so
that
was kind of how he measured his own shit and helped him, you know, become a better comic. And then I also had Tom Dreesen on, and I don't know, I'll send you the link, but you should listen to it, because he's like, he was the guy that mentored all of those guys. Like, he was the bridge.
Tom's actually, he was a consultant on the show.
Yeah, he's the bridge from, like, Rickles and Shelley Berman and those guys to Leno, Letterman, Carlin, and those guys. And he would sort of mentor these guys, and I think he helped them with that whole, you know, kind of union thing and get more pay. And he talked about, you know, how, you know, Jay and David were like kind of these fumbling comics who kind of were really nervous. And like, he just talks, he has a different perspective on them, you know, total respect, but like, you know, like, it's really funny to hear from his side. And he said, you know, everybody was clamoring to get on. Like you said, the Tonight Show was like the show. Merv Griffin would have comics on, but it was during the day and it didn't really mean as much. And there was only like one show to get on, like, unlike now where there's like, you know, a shit ton of comics and a shit ton of places you can try to get
like
on. You
300
know?
Shows a night. It seems like, you know,
and on digital
opportunities to get on. It's not even special anymore. And then Netflix is really diluting comedy. It's like, it's meaningless now. You know what I mean?
I was thinking that too. You're the only second person I heard say that, but I feel like they're doling them out. Like every time you turn around and it's somebody that like maybe he's a solid feature act or just starting to be a solid headlining act. Like, especially used to be like George Carlin, like that, like used to, like that was like the caliber. Like I'm seeing the same thing you are.
Well, the thing is, if it was going on HBO and they were putting it on Friday at most, that means HBO can put on four specials a month.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that made it special.
Right.
Because it was special because there wasn't a lot of people, you know, one that could do it and the space to do it.
Right.
Well, Netflix is a hard drive.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
They can put on as many and do it whatever is want.
But I think it's watering down the meaning of what an hour special is. Right. I don't think it's as special as sure. I'm not taking anything away. I think you're different because Showtime doesn't put on 50 a week. You know what I mean? So I think yours is a real accomplishment and a credit to you, and it's your second one. I mean, it's, you know, that obvious, and you're really good. And I'm not saying everybody that gets a special on Netflix isn't whatever. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like they maybe should pull back a little bit, you know, but.
Well, I mean, that's just their model. They wanted to take over comedy. They hijacked it, you know?
Yeah.
They hijacked it and they overpaid for it and they did it.
Yeah.
This is how you know Netflix won. Is when Monique was mad at them for not giving her more money for her special.
Right.
Netflix isn't government owned.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not some government institution where they have to give people. No, it's their preference.
Yeah.
They should have just said, hey, we don't fuck with you.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that with you.
Yeah.
Because this is our private business. But the fact that she felt like she deserved it, that means Netflix did their job. They hijacked comedy and made it where you can only do it there. That's the best place to do it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, that's their motto. So now they're just getting it out there. But at the same time, though, it's like, it's great that, like, you know, you're a comic and we make our money on the road. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so now you have a place for people to see you. And that's what they want. You know, they want to see it first and then they're going to come out.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's the business now. You know, it's the game, you know, so.
As
much as I feel the same as you, because I don't know how old you are, but like I just remember I'm so kind of old school when it comes to like when we think about comedy specials. So we think it's supposed to be a certain way, but you know, this is just a new way, and we have to just wrap our brains around.
Yeah,
it, like
absolutely.
The internet,
why? Know? I know you kind of you were working, then you were in comedy, and then you left for like 10 years, like, and then came back to it What was that about? And like, how did that help you when you walked away from it and coming back?
Well, you know, I don't know if it helped me so much. I mean, I regret that. I regret it to this day. I still regret that. Mm. I'm from LA. And so like, this is like the star capital. And this is like, I didn't know what to do. That's what it was. I wasn't ready for the grind. I wasn't ready for the struggle.
Oh, you wanted instant fame. You were like, I'm going to tell jokes for 2 weeks and then I'm going to get my own TV show kind of thing or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, exactly. That's what you thought it was about. Right, that's what you right. thought happened.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, you start going and you go, well, how do you get on the stage? And then you don't get on the stage. You have to do these shit open mics at bars and coffee shops. And then you see the same people over and over again. And I was young. I was, you know, in my early 20s and I was like, you know, arrogant. I thought I was the funniest person in the whole wide world. And I'm going to these open mics with these shit comics. And I'm like, what's going on? How do I get away from
right.
this?
Right.
I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? That's yeah. really what it was. I wasn't ready. I wasn't mentally prepared for the grind.
Right.
And it just took me to get to 30 years old to be like, I have to like earn this.
Right.
I have to build relationships. I have to prove myself. I have to keep working all the time, you know?
Yeah.
This is my big advice for anyone trying to do this is I always say this over and over again. People don't fail, they quit.
Yeah. 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 And this business especially, I tell people, it's designed to have you quit because it's designed to just it keeps punching you in the solar plexus and you have to go, no, I'll take another. Because it really, what it does is it's a game of attrition and it wears people down. So the ones that are left standing.
Wears people down.
It's the ones that are left standing are not necessarily even better than the ones that aren't. It's just they were able to take more punches to the face. They wanted it more badly.
Exactly.
Or
but you know what?
Whatever.
It's like sports, man. It's like sports. You know, you got that number one draft pick who like, you know, just didn't live up to the pressure and the potential. He didn't live up to his potential.
Right.
That happens a lot. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Then you get a guy like Dennis Rodman, who
yeah.
like, you know, he's undersized. And, you know, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens in any business, you know.
But and then once you went back with a cleaner perspective, because the same thing happened to me. I had a whole other career. I was like a lawyer before I did this. And then I started doing it. And I'm like, man, this sucks. And then I went back. And then I was like, but I really want to do it. So then I went back to comedy again. But that, you know, and then I had people who had power over me. You know, like you said, those open mic nights and all that shit, like who in my other job would not have been allowed to like literally Xerox documents. Like now this person had power
right.
over me and I would like, I was
right,
like,
right, right.
I would come home like fuming like this fucking guy. And literally, I mean, I'm not even joking. Like this guy was, they were pretty much mostly scumbags, but they had the power and I had to play the game. And that's what I had to get my head around. And that took me a while. I eventually did, but it was the same kind of thing. Like, okay, this is the shit you got to eat if you want to get where you want to get, you know?
Yeah. It's a tough thing, man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I always find it funny. You know, when somebody, you know, when he's like young, some young guy comes up to you and he's like, man, I want to be a comic. And my thought is always, why?
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, well, come talk to me in 5 years. Cause I can't deal with you right now.
Yeah.
You know, cause you're just too, you know, you still have a soul. You think that, you know what I mean?
yeah,
still,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to be around you, your goodness right now because,
yeah.
you know, it's just, yeah. it's going to be sad what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And then when you survive all that and then you come out the other side,
right.
you're just tougher and stronger and you just, you know, you have a better understanding,
yeah.
but it's not for everyone, man.
No.
It's not for everyone.
No. Well, people need to go check out your special June 8th, American Warrior on Showtime. Second one. Congratulations. You're a really funny dude. We've kind of crossed paths a little bit at the Melrose Improv, but we've never really talked. But when I see you in LA, if you see me in New York, we should definitely have a beer and hang out.
Well, I'm coming to New York next week. I'll be at Caroline's on Broadway next weekend.
All right. Well, give me we'll get as soon as this is over, we'll get some info and get in touch with each other. But June 8th, and where can people check you on social media and all that stuff?
It's just my name, Eric Griffin with a K, E-R-I-K Griffin. I'm at Eric Griffin on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all that stuff. So just hit me up there. My website's ericgriffin.com. I'm starting to get out on the road right now in between shooting things. I got some movies coming up, and I'm Dying Up Here is also Sundays on Showtime at 10 o'clock. So make sure you check that out and check out my special. And hey, you know, I appreciate you having me on, and let's just keep fighting the good fight
until
people start to laugh again without any, like, you know,
Yeah.
Without any reservation.
Yeah, I think guys like us have to try to keep putting a dent in that whole PC armor shit that's happening out there. So, but yeah, great job, man. Congratulations on the special. And any other time you want to come on and talk comedy or promote something, definitely come back, man. I'd love to have you.
I will. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. That's Eric Griffin, June 8th, Showtime, American Warrior. And I'm dying up here, and you can catch him out on the road. Check out his website. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. That was Eric Griffin. Hope you guys enjoyed it. He's great. Great show. Check it out on Showtime. And check me out this weekend at Governor's Comedy Club in Levittown, New York, in Long Island. And please leave some comments on my iTunes page saying nice things about the podcast. All right, guys. See you next week.